The 100th anniversary commemoration of the 8th Street Viaduct, the 8th Street Bridge, or better known to many of the younger generation, the Albertus Meyer Bridge in Allentown, takes place November the 17th with a grand event at Penn State Lehigh Valley, Center Valley, the campus, in the gallery. Quoting from a dedication ceremony handout of November the 17th, 1913, and I quote, "This bridge is more than just a concrete joiner of a great city. It is a creation by artisans, carpenters, iron workers, cement workers, engineers, managers, and business executives, all artists of practical form," close quote. This year's November 17th event features more than 30 regional artists and offers an historical perspective, a poetical interpretation, video commentaries, and special visitations. This is Lehigh Valley Art Salon, WDIY 88.1 in Allentown, and I remain George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host, Kate Scuffle, we chat today with Anne Lalick, who is the director and arts coordinator of Penn State Lehigh Valley Gallery, and with Dr. Anne Williams, chancellor at Penn State. Welcome.
Hi, George. Great to be here.
Hi, George. How are you? Oh, great. Good. Fine. Thank you.
It's interesting. We were talking about this a little bit earlier, and you said that occasionally people come up to you and say, "So you're doing a show about a bridge, and why is that?"
Well, a lot of people say, "You're doing a show about the 8th Street Bridge? Yeah, why?" Yeah. You know? And I think one of the first comments I got on Facebook had to do with how many suicides were from that bridge, and this is not what that's about at all. Mm-hmm. The bridge is just an example of... and I believe Frank Whelan was the one to say this, and I'd love to repeat it if I can do him any justice, is this is representation of a time when civil building really were art forms. Buildings were art forms, and this is an absolutely beautiful, magnificent bridge. It was the longest bridge in the world, the longest concrete bridge in the world of its time. I don't know how long it kept that distinction, but it was, and it really spurred our economy in the Lehigh Valley. So... there's so many things about the bridge that artists have been inspired by over the years, you know, the last 100 years. And when you start to think about that and see what's been done, I think it makes a lot of sense to give tribute.
Absolutely.
Well, I think it's curious to me too that I don't think I'd realize how many artists had been inspired by it. And it's some of the work in the show goes back to the 1920s, continues into the current art scene right now. And George, the quote you had shared with us at the beginning, the idea that, as you said, Anne, the bridge itself was a work of art and considered a work of art by the people that created it.
Exactly.
So it's a real meeting of and connecting for the future. I love that idea that it's the past and the present being brought together.
I think Anne Williams gets credit for the title, Connecting to the Future. So, you know,
I'll take any credit I can get. I'm not proud.
Well, Anne, you were apparently when Anne mentioned the idea, you felt that this was a really wonderful match for Penn State. You were excited. Could you tell us a little about that?
Sure. I mean, one of the things is it's a great pleasure to have somebody like Anne Lalick who comes up with these ideas. And we have a tendency to kind of bandy back and forth a little bit. When she mentioned this, I thought this was perfect for Penn State to do because, you know, the bridge is turning 100 years this year. We just turned 100 years. One of the things I think that it was the community that came together in a number of people here 100 years ago to build this bridge. And it was the community that came together with Penn State to say, we need to have education here. Mm-hmm. And we actually started out very much with an engineering background. And so, I mean, I have no confirmation of this, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised if some of the Penn State engineers probably worked on the bridge.
That's interesting.
So, you know, Penn State itself is with their land-grant mission, is very much involved in the community. I think this was a community marker to be able to, you know, I was interested in George's comment in the beginning, and he talked about a joiner, joining the two sides of the community here, and Penn State has been involved in that for many years. So it seemed like a perfect fit for us.
And you've blended, one of the things that's really interesting to you, blended the past and present by not only having the artwork there, but the, there's a an IT element of the show that you had suggested, featuring some iPad minis scattered about the gallery.
You know, we wanted to make it a little dynamic. And the pictures themselves or the paintings, they hold their own beauty. But I think the one of the biggest things with the A Street Bridge and this project is that there's a concept to it. There's a history to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we thought about how we maybe could tell a little bit of that history. So what we've done is we have iPad minis that are located next to the paintings or the pieces of art.
Okay.
And in many cases, you have the artists themselves telling you about why they took that picture and perhaps a little bit about the lighting that might have come into play. Or one of our artists talks about the fact that he got up in the morning and looked outside and said, this is perfect, and threw on a sweatsuit to go out and take the picture or whatever it might be. So, you know, there's a dynamic little bit of history or concept that's associated with each of the pieces of art.
And what would there be a common thread, do you think, in the work as you look at it, as to what inspired people, the ambition of it, the beauty of the bridge? It seems like there's a lot of personal stories involved with it too, Allentown figures, the artists themselves.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, you know, all the artists come to this with their own story.
Yeah.
I think the artists that represent generations past, you know, like the Walter Emerson Baums and the Edgar Baums. I think some of their work really was about just trying to create its magnificent beauty in these neighborhoods that surrounded it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really was about a more of a physical bridge. I think as the more modern artists and the artists that were actually invited to participate in this exhibition, I find that some of them are coming with stories about their memories from their childhood or just sort of a more conceptual idea of bridging or bridging to the past to the future. One of the artists, for instance, Heather Sienkiewicz, has a multimedia sculptural piece where she talks about her memory of being a child and or a teenager driving across the bridge when her parents took her from the suburbs into Center City Allentown to go to art school. So, and so she has a sound element where you hear the sort of the thump, 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 thump as you pass over the bridge. And she talks about how she would lay in the kind of sit in the back seat of the car with her eyes closed and hear this noise. So it was more of a memory. Not so much a visual memory, but sort of using other senses to remember this time in her life. So it is interesting how the more modern artists come to the story with just very unique ideas on the bridge and how it has affected their life.
Yeah, well, one actual piece, of course, is Walter Emerson Baum's. And that was painted in about 1932, was it not?
Yes.
But it is not the oldest painting in the exhibit.
The oldest painting is by John Berninger, who was a friend of Walter Baum's, one of his contemporaries, and that one is dated 1928.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the oldest piece in the show.
The other contemporaries were Oliver Harvard, Hans Milwald, and a student was Alvina Sekar, is that right?
Alvina Sekar was one of Walter Baum's students, and both paintings are dated 1932, which I thought was interesting. And they're hung next to each other in the exhibit. So when you look at them together, I almost imagine that Walter was standing over Alvina's shoulder and maybe helping her and maybe adding a little paint stroke here and there. They really look very much, their palette was very much the same, and there's a similarity to the paintings. And Alvina Sekar is someone that I never really heard much about, except for knowing that she was a student of Walter's, and it says it on the back of her painting. But we actually did some research about her, and there's some interesting stories that are told about her, and she was quite an activist of her time. And in the stories, they just sort of mention that she lived in Allentown and went to a one-room schoolhouse and studied with a prominent artist back in the 30s. So there a lot of interesting little stories have unfolded by researching some of these artists from the past, too.
Wonderful. I'm intrigued. I truly am. I was blessed to be involved at one moment, a very brief moment, very early, with a video, and I was watching some of the paintings that were coming into you while those videos were being made, and it just took my breath away. It truly did when I looked at some of these paintings.
Mm-hmm. Well, wait till you see the exhibit itself. It really is breathtaking, seeing the work next to each other, old and new, and just the way the colors and the textures all just complement each other. It is stunning.
Yes, I'm sure it is. And some of the other people that are involved, of course, we'll talk about a little bit more after the break, because there's some exciting stories that each and every of the artists have in connecting for the future. The 8th Street Bridge actually turns 100. We're going to return shortly with more on the 8th Street Bridge at the gallery, at the event, at Penn State, Lehigh Valley, after this salient message.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater on Bethlehem Southside, presenting Degeneration, an Exaltation of Larks. Written and performed by the Sandglass Theater, this new work is based on stories written collaboratively by Alzheimer's and late-stage dementia patients. Performed by 3 puppeteers and 5 puppets, Degeneration takes us into their complex and mysterious world, November 14th through 17th. For tickets or information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
For program support on WDIY, we thank the Sovereign Performing Arts Center, announcing The Barefoot Contessa coming to Reading. Ina Garten, cookbook author and star of Food Network's Barefoot Contessa, will be sharing her tips, stories, recipes, and answering audience questions Wednesday, November 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the Sovereign Performing Arts Center in Reading. Tickets at the box office, Ticketmaster.com, or 800-745-3000.
Just thought I'd mention you're listening to WDIY Lehigh Valley Art Salon. This is George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host Kate Scuffle, we're talking with Ann Lalick, who is the Director and Arts Coordinator of Penn State, Lehigh Valley, the Gallery, and Dr. Ann Williams, Chancellor at Penn State. What a fantastic idea you have designed and created here, taking advantage of all of the humanities, of art, of science, and, of course, of history.
And we should mention that the exhibit's actually open. The exhibit is open. It runs from October 28th to December 20th.
However.
But because of the anniversary, there's a special celebration on November 17th with Sounds Multimedia as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the exhibit, the reception is Sunday, November 17th from 2 to 4. And it is open to the public. It's free and open to the public. It's the artist reception, but we're also having... we're partnering with the Lehigh Valley Writing Project. There'll be poetry readings during that 2-hour period. Mm-hmm. And the Lehigh County Heritage Museum is also going to be doing a talk on some of the historical facts about the bridge. We also, you know, you mentioned how this is a multidisciplinary kind of exhibit, and many of our classes, our engineering classes, our history classes, some of our freshman year experience classes are doing projects and doing activities all around this exhibit. Mm. And it's just heartwarming for me to see the faculty and the students use the gallery to learn other disciplines. So we'll have some little surprises on that day as well from our students. Also, everybody who comes to the event will receive a full color commemorative catalog of the exhibit, which features all of the artwork and a few other little interesting facts about the bridge as well. So it's going to be a great event.
You know, I'm sure some of your listeners are sitting at home saying, it's a bridge.
Yeah, so
what's the big deal? What's the big deal? And I have to tell you, I have never seen so many scenes of a bridge that, and the beauty of it, that these individuals have painted or shot. Mm-hmm. It's extraordinary to see it from everybody's perspective.
Yeah. Well, now, I was going to ask, you have a piece in the show as well. What did the show itself inspire you to create that, or was the bridge something that had affected you?
Actually, my arts coordinator over here inspired me to do it. I have to say that I did not know much about the A Street Bridge until Ann had brought this up, and and then suggested that perhaps I do a photo, and did my own little research to try to just find out just exactly what perspective to do. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. It's fascinating to hear the history and, mm-hmm. and to just see what impact it had. And so it tends to impact you as an artist.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, many of the recent pieces, you know, as Anne said, some of them talked about memories that they had. Others didn't know about it, but then went down and said, wow, look at the beauty of this. So it's just fascinating to watch everybody's perspective and to take a look at the total exhibit that's out there.
I have to say, George is being a little humble early. George is one of the voices that one might see on video talking about a character who worked on the bridge mm-hmm. and prepping for that exactly. We talked to Frank Whale and did some reading, and I was amazed. How long have I lived here? I had no idea. The bridge really echoes kind of the growth of Allentown, the ambition that Harry Trex was involved, of course, you know, that kind of reaching for the stars. We're going to build the biggest, the best. It's going to be beautiful. We're going to join the two sides of the community. We're going to think mm-hmm. big. Mm-hmm. It's just really exhilarating.
And I have to tell you, I don't want to fill your husband's head, but he did such a nice piece that he was the one piece that we didn't even cut or edit at all.
Don't tell
it
him
was,
that.
It was well done.
I didn't hear that.
Well done.
Well, when we were listening to the taping of George portraying, I'm not going to say his name right, Padraig Walsh?
Yeah, Padraig Walsh.
Yeah. Padraig Walsh. Those of us who were sitting in the back sort of listening to this, all of our eyes were welling up with tears. We're starting to cry when we're hearing this man's story about the heart and soul he put into helping to build the bridge. And it really is touching. I mean, if you come for nothing else, come to see the monologue by George Miller.
That's why we really wanted to have this dynamic portion, this yeah. way of seeing or listening to or hearing more about some of the history. And we just, as we went through it, what was about maybe 2 months ago, 3 months ago that we decided, because we've been working on this for a while, but it was about 2 or 3 months ago that we said, we've got to add a little bit more to it. We've mm-hmm, got to have mm-hmm. this little dynamic piece of history that's there in front of you. And it worked out very well. Thanks to our IT and our video components. I mean, they did a great job.
And some of the other folks that represent the Historical Society, who else are aside from the artists?
Lehigh Valley Writing Project.
Okay.
They did a whole bridge writing, I'm probably not saying this right, mm-hmm. they did a writing marathon on bridges.
Oh, wow.
In September they did this. So some of the writing fellows from the Lehigh Valley Writing Project will be contributing poetry.
Wow.
So that'll yeah. be interesting too. And I just want to add that Dr. Williams, Anne Williams, likes to just sort of turn up the stress notch every now and then. And I think that's why she wanted to throw in the iPad mini concept. But we do have a very talented group of people at Penn State Lehigh yes. Valley, as she said, our IT department. But we also have a new I'm not going to say it right, multimedia
innovation center
okay. where we have the capability to do this sort of recording and mm. editing, and it's just amazing what they can do. I mean, I wouldn't know the first thing how to do this, but, you know, I just got the people there to be interviewed,
right.
and then they
make
did
the
a
magic
really
happen.
Great job.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really exciting to be working with people like that who can help you do these things.
It's interesting that it sounds like there's voices to the exhibit, because the thing that keeps touching me is when I read about the certain works or Baum's piece showing the village, the kind of community under the bridge. There's always the story of the artisans, the community, the mm-hmm. town, the people mm-hmm. you've said are already been at the exhibit saying that's where my grandmother lived, right around the corner, right there in the painting.
So
it's not just a bridge.
This is a piece of women's history. It was a woman who walked over the first time. So
yes. Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
She didn't have to pay a toll?
She did.
She did.
Oh, she did. Okay.
It's recorded. I would just like to say, too, that if just in case my husband, John, is watching this, people get it, too, because he started collecting artwork about the bridge probably 15 years ago.
Amazing.
That's
interesting. And that's really the genesis for the
He's
idea.
A prime
this
mover
idea.
Here.
He is. He is. And he encouraged me to, you know, to go with this idea. So it's fun to, you know, to mm-hmm. see.
Have you been surprised? Happened. I mean, in the process of collecting that, not to get just at how much work there was out there already? I wouldn't have thought.
You know, I wasn't surprised.
I mean, it makes
surprised.
Sense to me now. But
I wasn't surprised, but, you know, we would just happen upon things. Okay. And then sometimes people we know would give John a gift. Like uh-huh, somebody uh-huh. would say, well, I know you collect this. I took this photograph for you. Mm-hmm. Or I commissioned one of the artists many years ago uh-huh. for our anniversary to do a painting for John.
Okay.
So, yeah, we...
Yeah.
Very not surprised.
Good. Very good. It's really interesting how it all comes together in the end. I personally have to say thanks to Frank Whalen, who has a historical mind beyond any in the Lehigh Valley, and has helped me doing the research. And I did put in about, I would say, about 2-3 weeks of research in trying to figure out exactly what I wanted to do. Like Anne, it doesn't just pop into your head or look at the bridge and paint it. Yeah, so it's grand. I just want to remind everyone that's November the 17th, the very day in 1913 that the bridge was dedicated, is the commemoration of that event at Penn State Gallery. Say hello to Anne, and both Annes, actually, and be a part of what is truly the history of Allentown and the art of Allentown. That's very important.
I was going to suggest go to the website, Penn State Lehigh Valley, find the gallery on there. It's wonderful. I understand that you guys would appreciate, although it's not required to appreciate RSVPs, to have an idea what to expect.
We want to know how many catalogs.
That's right. That's right. And the beautiful catalog, which is really a lovely gift to the community.
Well, we thank you, Dr. Anne and Anne, for creating and designing this fabulous historic and artistic event. And we will be there, I'm sure. Good. Thanks for being with us.
We look forward to having you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
I'm Maria Filosa from WDIY, and you're listening to Tasty Seasonal Recipes for the Everyday Chef. Most of us have heard of flatbreads, and maybe we have even purchased them in the store or at restaurants. They are called by many different names. You may have heard them called tortillas in Mexico, focaccia in Italy, naan in India, but they are all versions of the same thing, an unleavened bread rolled out flat and then grilled. Lately, it seems that it's the newest item on many restaurant menus. They are served as both appetizers and, in some cases, main entrees. What really amazes me is how easy it is to create your own and how inexpensively as well. The basic ingredients are flour, water, and salt. If you have never made them before, it would be good to start out with unbleached white flour, since that will give you the very best results. Once you have an idea of how to work with the dough, then you can experiment with different types of flours. Each will produce a different flavor, firmness, and texture to your finished flatbread. To begin, in a bowl, place 1 cup of flour and 1/2 teaspoon of salt. Stir to distribute the salt. Then add 1/2 cup of water. Mix thoroughly until a soft dough forms. Depending upon the humidity level in your kitchen, you may need to add a little more flour. I like to add the flour 1 tablespoon at a time so I don't make my dough too dry. What you want to achieve is a smooth dough ball that doesn't stick to your fingers. Divide the dough into 4 pieces. On a floured surface, roll out each section until you get 6-inch circles. Heat a skillet on medium-high with 1 teaspoon of oil. When the oil is hot but not smoking, gently place 1 of the 6-inch circles of dough into the center of the pan. Cover the skillet. The dough will begin to puff and brown on the bottom. Flip it over and brown the other side about 30 seconds. Remove your flatbread from the skillet. Cook remaining circles of dough. Now the fun part, you are ready to add your toppings. Place each flatbread on a foil-covered cookie sheet. Brush the tops with olive oil, then place various combinations of your favorite foods on top. You can then bake your finished flatbreads for about 10 minutes at 450 degrees for a wonderful, quick, and delicious meal, or just use them as a base for your toppings and eat your creation without further baking. It's entirely up to you. An easy classic topping choice would be thin slices of tomato, basil leaves, and Parmesan cheese. Another great choice is a little red tomato sauce, ricotta cheese, and pepperoni. These will create pizza-type versions. Very safe, very easy. Now it's time to get a little crazy. In a skillet, cook some sliced mushrooms in a bit of olive oil until tender. Then add a tablespoon of any flavor balsamic vinegar. Cook until the liquid is absorbed. Place the mushrooms on the flatbread along with some cheese of your choice and a bit of fresh thyme and basil. Make a Thai version by heating small pieces of chicken combined with either bottled peanut sauce or some peanut butter with a little bit of oil added and some shredded carrot. Spread over the flatbread, then sprinkle on some thinly sliced green onions. For a barbecue flatbread, shred or cut some cooked beef or pork and spread thinly on top. Brush on some homemade or bottled barbecue sauce, then top with some cheddar cheese. Heat to melt the cheese. A quick Mexican meal could be made by spreading your flatbread with some refried beans, then adding some shredded cheese and jalapeno pepper slices. Heat, then serve with sour cream. Look in your refrigerator to see what leftovers you have. Little bits of almost anything spread onto a flatbread and covered with cheese is both thrifty and a great way to get rid of foods that are not enough to feed an entire family, yet still good. So keep some homemade flatbreads in your freezer for some spur-of-the-moment meals, and don't be afraid to experiment. You really can't go wrong. I'm Maria Filosa. Stay tuned for more tasty seasonal recipes for the everyday chef. Have a bountiful day.
Next up on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, At the Movies, a review of a current film with Paul Willistein of the Press.
When is speaking your mind saying too much? And when is biting your tongue not saying enough? Truth in conversation, feelings, and action is at the heart of Enough Said, an entertaining and thoughtful romantic comedy memorable for its nuanced performances, especially that of James Gandolfini, in what is believed to be his second-to-last big-screen role. Look for an Oscar actor nomination for James Gandolfini for Enough Said, and a possible win for the highly regarded and beloved actor, best known as Tony Soprano on HBO's The Sopranos. Gandolfini may garner enough votes to win over all but certain nominees Tom Hanks for Captain Phillips and Robert Redford for All Is Lost in what augurs to be close voting. Julia Louis-Dreyfus will probably receive an Oscar actress nomination with Enough Said screenwriter-director Nicole Holofcener, who directed Please Give, Friends with Money, and Lovely and Amazing, a likely Oscar original screenplay nominee. Enough Said is the kind of film that Hollywood studios roll out in the fall during the serious moviegoer Oscar contender season. It's a kind of film that Alan Alda might have starred in. James Gandolfini is not your tennis-playing Alan Alda type. Quite the opposite. He's a bear of a man, and here, quite the teddy bear. His smiley, squinty eyes, cherubic countenance with a nose seemingly pummeled one too many times, is quite the opposite of the mobster he played on The Sopranos. The character played by Gandolfini also has issues, but not of the shrink-worthy soprano variety. The character in Enough Said is overweight, and that becomes an issue in the film, as apparently it was for James Gandolfini in real life. Julia Louis-Dreyfus is the perfect, energetic, perky foil to James Gandolfini's slow, bear-like demeanor. Her eyes are often big as saucers. Her facial expressions are really funny. She has immediate responses to those she's conversing with. She departs from her best-known television persona as Elaine on Seinfeld. Louis-Dreyfus is a clown in the best sense of the cinema, going back to the silent era. Catherine Keener has a role as Marianne in Enough Said. She's a poet with a past. We won't say whose past, as that would spoil the film for you. Toni Collette plays a best friend in Enough Said. Enough Said is about the relationship between Albert, played by James Gandolfini, director of a broadcast television museum, and Eva, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, a massage therapist. The two divorcees are about to become empty nesters when their daughters go off to college. The subplots in Enough Said are about the relationship of Albert and his daughter, and Ava and her daughter. Enough Said is emotionally powerful. It's the kind of film that sneaks up on you. Credit director Nicole Holofcener's and Gandolfini's and Louis-Dreyfus' subtle performances. If you enjoy fine film performances, are a fan of Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and especially James Gandolfini, don't miss Enough Said. James Gandolfini's acting prowess is extraordinary. His last film role, by the way, is Animal Rescue, set for 2014. What a loss. Enough Said, indeed. Enough Said is MPAA-rated PG-13 for crude and sexual content, comic violence, language, and partial nudity. Opening November 8 is Thor: The Dark World. Thor embarks on yet another quest, and we're not just talking about his quest to unseat Iron Man as the most popular, critically acclaimed, and commercially successful Marvel comic adapted to the big screen. Chris Hemsworth plays Thor, Natalie Portman plays Jane Foster, Tom Hiddleston plays Loki, Anthony Hopkins plays Odin, Kat Dennings plays Darcy Lewis. The film also stars Christopher Eccleston, Idris Elba, Rene Russo, Jamie Alexander, and Stellan Skarsgård, also star in the fantasy adventure film. I'm Paul Willistein of the Lehigh Valley Press at the movies for WDIY.